So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, who will lead the BBC after the current DG? What will Bake Off lose when it loses Toxvig? And how can a new global TV news network rival CNN? Plus, the Victoria Derbyshire show is axed and is shorthand due a revival. And in the media quiz, we get to know the latest virtual influencer and her AI-generated poetry. It's all to come in today's Media Podcast. And joining me today, it's podcaster and deputy editor of Pilot TV magazine, Boyd Hilton. Hello, Boyd.
Hello.
I see you've been hosting a Q&A at the BFI. Nothing unusual there. This is your life.
Yeah.
Except this one was for the 21st anniversary of Spaced.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one, I have to say.
Well,
yeah.
Gel.
Yeah, they're all there. I had 8 people on stage, which is a lot to deal with in a Q&A situation. So it's quite stressful.
Still all friends?
He's still all friends. Everyone except Nick Frost was there. They're still friends with Nick Frost, but he was filming, so he couldn't come. But everyone else, every other major cast member and writer and director was there. It was lovely, yeah.
What did we learn?
We learned that if you ask one question of Edgar Wright, he can go on for about 15 minutes, and thus leaving you not enough time for audience questions at the end.
Right, but
apologies
I imagine
to everyone who was there.
But I imagine a perfect playlist delivered to your inbox afterwards.
Oh,
all the music
all of
that, accompanied.
All of that, yeah. No, they were great fun. Yeah.
Also joining us today, making her media podcast debut, is the founder of Wakey, Deborah Coughlin. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You are most welcome. What is Wakey, then?
Wakey is an app that has in it a 9-minute micro breakfast show delivered to your phone 5 days a week, Monday to Friday. And the content is created kind of in the spirit of Big Breakfast. It's got that kind of just fun vibe in the morning.
I did get that from your graphic design. So well done.
That's good. Yeah. Good. We're achieving that. It's presented by Chris Taylor, who was in Love Island 2019 and did the salmon a lot. And Ginger Johnson, who's one of the main MCs at Sync the Pink.
So drag queen.
Yeah, drag queen. And actually they're brilliant together. We've got another presenter joining us next week. And basically the content, all the entertainment is designed by scientists, psych experts, behaviour change experts, and telly and content people.
I'm glad some telly and content people are involved, aren't you, Boyd?
I am. Thanks. Just heavens for that.
Generally, daytime TV isn't best designed by scientists.
But the combination of them together, well, it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know how much you want to hear.
I want to hear you talk about the mental health and well-being stuff, because that's part of it, isn't it? That's why scientists, right?
Yeah, because basically I was looking at mental health in hard hit areas, and we were looking at the fact that there's absolutely tons of products and services out there, but there's really low engagement. So 74% of people stop using a wellbeing app after 10 uses.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you all have apps you have deleted, maybe reinstalled and deleted again, whether they're diet,
didn't
meditation.
Even install them.
Gave up before, yeah. before I left the app store.
Yeah.
And that's most people's kind of experience, but loads of people actually use entertainment to regulate their emotions. So you get in after a stressful day at work and Love Island's the only thing that's going to really chill you out. Or like my go-to is The American Office. I've probably watched The American Office 25 times in total. They're like the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, some people, especially people listening to this, will think, okay, well then podcasts, you know, that's on demand.
Yeah.
What, this is a TV show basically, right?
Yeah.
But it's not live, but it is from that morning.
Well, we do it. We record it the week before. When we did our pilot, we did them all live at 7 a.m. in the morning, and it was exhausting.
Yeah,
hence the pre-record.
And we realised it wasn't totally necessary, and people didn't want it. But
I'm just curious about the mechanics. Yeah. So you set on the app. You say what time you want it to wake you up with your TV show.
Yeah.
So you say right, I want it for 8 a.m.
Yeah.
But then, I mean. And about you, when I wake up and the alarm goes off,
yeah.
I turn over and go, oh, fuck's sake, and put it on snooze.
Well, that's,
I don't want to be watching a bright TV show right then.
Well, that's part of the point of it, actually. So we were looking at behaviours that are not so great for us. Snooze is actually one of them. So a lot can go wrong in the mornings. And actually, you know, most sleep apps tackle the evening. So that's why we did a breakfast show, because we thought actually the morning is the time where you can help people really have a better start to the day. And part of that is, so there is an alarm in the app that you can use to go off, and straight away when you hit it, you go into the live feed and there's chat there so you can chat with people. It is not for everybody, but it is the only mental well-being app that is designed for
in the style of the big breakfast.
Normal people who actually just want entertainment aren't interested in personal development
yeah.
as some kind of way to optimize themselves as kind of a cog in the machine. Just normal people who actually just want a bit of a happier life and go to content. But content is hardly ever designed to make people happier. It's designed to keep people watching it. So, like, I think it was the leadership at Netflix that said, actually, their biggest competitor was sleep. That's actually a really concerning thing. Like, that shouldn't be what content is created for, just to keep you watching it.
All right, well, let's start by talking about some more conventional TV and yeah. radio. Tony Hall and the Blob. That is how the Sunday Telegraph editor Alistair Heath described the BBC this week. Now, in our media predictions episode a couple of weeks back, many of our seasoned media contributors warned that the corporation was going to be facing a nightmare year with the government questioning the license fee, the rise in streaming and so on. Now we know they are losing a director general this summer as well, Boyd.
Mm.
Lord Hall, your verdict?
Well, I've met him a few times because of these Q&As that I host for the BBC sometimes. So, you know, the big ones like, I think Dracula Before Christmas, you know, the BBC One flagship adaptation of that show. And of course, he introduced it have a few quick little chat with him. And he's always been a very decent, nice, civilized human being, I think. I think his main legacy will be tarnished by the whole equal pay issue.
Mm.
You know, I think generally the BBC screwed that up, something rotten, and, you know, the whole thing's been a bit of a farce.
And he's been there 7 years, so it very much was under his watch.
Yeah, it was absolutely under his watch. But apart from that, I think the BBC, I feel like if you take a step back and think where the BBC was maybe 10 years ago, before his tenure, when I think there were lots of question marks about its content, to use that horrendous word, about, you know, is it doing enough good drama and comedy? I think in terms of the entertainment stuff, as opposed to forgetting news for a minute, I think he's done a really good job of keeping up with, you know, the Netflixes and the HBOs and the Skies of this world. I think, you know, its drama and comedy have possibly, you know, never been as strong, really. I think it's doing so. I think that, you know, people often underestimate that kind of thing about the BBC. They just go, oh yeah, you know, every other week there's a really good drama on the BBC. And people,
a lot of it's co-productions, though, isn't it?
Oh yeah, but that's absolutely as it should be.
But is that future protected, though? Really?
Well, I think it's more future protected than if they just did it all on their own. I think if you know, we'll get on to various discussions later about shows that are going to be axed. And I think if they did just finance everything themselves, you wouldn't get the production values you get on these shows, like His Dark Materials, for example, or every drama it looks beautiful and is brilliantly made. You wouldn't get that if they're going to finance it all themselves. But also, it makes it easier for them to keep up with those giants whose budgets are 10 times the BBC's budget entirely. So I think in that creative field, it's doing really well. I think there are huge issues in news and current affairs.
Deborah, how do you mark his 7 years in the job?
Well, I used to work at the BBC on and off for Radio 4. And, well, what I have some experience of working there, but really, what struck me about some of the announcements that have happened in the past few days is it feels like everybody kind of held their breath until the election, then Christmas happened, and then a load of stuff happened. So a load of press releases went out that had perhaps been worked on for a while. And bearing in mind the political situation, maybe this is what seemed best.
Yeah, so just a bit of inside baseball stuff here. So the timings are quite interesting, aren't they? Because a lot of people said in our prediction special, oh, we all thought that Lord Hall was going to bugger off in 2019. Then he didn't. So he's obviously sticking around for the centenary, which is 2022, I think.
Yeah.
But no, it's happened now. And I've seen things saying, well, the reason for that is the government will have a role in choosing the next chairman, but by leaving now, the current chairman, not chosen by this government, gets to choose who the next director general is. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I've read that as well. Yeah, and but I've also read that Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings want a say in
the DG.
The DG, but they don't get a say, do they? So I mean, they can want a say as much as they want, but the fact is, it's not up to them, and they shouldn't be interfering. And you know, I think it feels to me like that the fact that they're apparently saying that, they haven't said it publicly. I don't think they would dare say it publicly.
Well, the Daily Mail reported that number 10 sources said that.
Right.
They said it.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it was close.
Did you see the hustings when they were, so the Conservative Party hustings leadership when they were talking about the BBC?
Yeah.
So the feeling in that room was privatising the BBC or just getting rid of the BBC was a very positive thing. So if I was running the BBC and then a very hostile set of people came in who were going to be giving me a hard time, and I'd been there 7 years, I might go and do something a little bit easier.
Yeah, and the rumour is John Whittingdale might come back as culture secretary, and he's said...
God, that's... Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I think he's... I mean, he is... And I've met him a few times as well. He's a heat subscriber. Yeah, he is, yeah. So the one time I met him at the Edinburgh TV Festival, when he was culture secretary...
He congratulated you on Torso of the Week?
He congratulated me on Torso of the Week. And he was quite excited to meet me. He said, oh, you work for Heat, don't you? Yeah. He goes, yeah, we get every week, subscribe, you know, because he felt like he had to, as a cultural thing, he had to keep up, which I thought, well, that's fine.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
But his views on the BBC are absolutely ridiculous, I think. And I think, you know, he seems to be very much anti the whole idea of the BBC. I mean, I may be misstating, but he's definitely not, you know, not in favour of the way it is at the moment. And, there are, BBC has issues, but just assuming, as I think some of the people did in the hustings you mentioned, that there has to be turned into a subscription service. It's not that simple. That would be a very, very complicated thing to do. And finding a strong new head of the BBC hopefully will address that.
I mean, who knows what's coming the way. Did you see Dominic Cummings' job advert?
Mm, yeah.
Which I actually thought, if that had been coming from somebody who was leading a cultural institution, would be the best advert ever, and I would definitely have applied for. But it's not necessarily the group of people I want to be working for. But an amazing amount of things could get broken and played with and deconstructed and reconstructed with this particular attitude that you could read in that job description.
Except in reality, you say you work for the BBC, nothing fast happens at the BBC, does it? You know, programmes get commissioned 3 years ahead of time.
But I think fast things could happen to them. It's not that necessarily them doing it. It's going to be done to them, I think.
But the government sort of respond in kind usually, don't they? There's a lot of talk about, oh, we need to renegotiate the licence fee and have a conversation about in this fast-changing media world, da-di-da-di-da. But then in reality, it's small changes, really. I know it's a big deal that the BBC took on the burden of the over-75s and all that. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not the dramatic change you might interpret from statements that are made.
No, and I also think that, you know, going back to the Thatcher years, you know, Thatcher, you know, said all these things, you know, wasn't exactly friendly to the BBC. But in the end, when you have these big inquiries and big surveys and, you know, you look into the whole thing and people say things as particularly Tory ministers say vaguely anti-BBC type of things. But in the end, I think you take on the BBC at your peril. I think the BBC is still a very well trusted and loved institution. You know, I love the BBC. So, you know, I'm sure we're about to say various things about the BBC and criticise various decisions it makes, which can be cretinously stupid. But overall, I think it's a brilliant thing. And I think it would be almost impossible to sustain what it does in any meaningful way if you went to a new model, which isn't about the licence fee.
Does the next Director General have to be a woman?
Pretty much. I'd say.
Deborah?
I mean...
Well, I think have to would be...
I'm not saying legally have to, but...
A very strange situation.
But basically, because they kind of said it last time.
Well, if you look at the statistics, you would have thought that there are some women out there who were very capable of running that organisation very well. There's a lot of other large media institutions and organisations that are run by women incredibly well. So why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of strong candidates who are. I think the strongest candidates who, in the BBC at the moment. If you look at the people in the BBC, mm-hmm. I think the strongest candidates are female.
Let's do names. We're
Charlotte
that show.
Moore.
Charlotte Moore is. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
So former controller of BBC One. Now yeah. She's. What does she do? She's got like money on the purse strings, hasn't she? Basically, like she's,
somebody told me the title yesterday, and I can't remember it.
That's a good point. She's effectively in charge of
like
all.
Controller of entertainment and all the money you want.
Yeah,
basically her job.
Controller of all of TV, pretty
yeah,
much.
Something
she?
Like that.
So, yeah, kind of above the BBC One and BBC Two. Heads.
But Bob Shannon, he's a pretty strong candidate.
Is he though? Really?
Yes.
No.
He's controller of radio
I
and
know,
all money.
But I think the whole BBC Sounds thing, it, you know, whoever was in charge of that, I mean, I think that tarnishes their reputation because I think that was handled really badly. And I'm not sure if however much money they spent on BBC Sounds telling us we have to have this thing when we had a perfectly good app before, it was, you know, I think that's gone down really badly. So
who else then? So you say they're all
maybe
women.
Mainly Charlotte Moore, to be honest. I mean, I think, you know.
So your money's on Charlotte Moore?
It is. I think she's a, you know, she's a identifiable human being. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you talk to her again. I've met her many, many times. She's
I love the Boyd's professional analysis is based on what people
totally
are like over the tea
nice
and muffins.
She has got a very nice email tone. I've right only ever
tone.
Emailed her.
Right, just general tone. I think she's a sensible, common sense person. You know?
Somebody yesterday said to me, Jay Hunt from Apple is a possible poach.
Yeah, I've read Jay Hunt's. I mean, you know.
Well, she was very much in line for it before she went to Channel 4 first and then Apple, wasn't she? She was
clearly. Was mentioned in dispatches, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say.
And that would be great experience to come back to the BBC with experience of Apple.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Amazing.
That's
true.
Yeah, that's true.
So this week we learned that the Victoria Derbyshire show, the BAFTA-winning current affairs show, which I discussed with the launch editor on this show back in 2015. I can't believe we've been going longer than that show. is being axed for financial reasons. Mm. Now, that's been leaked ahead of a financial announcement that was going to be made by the BBC next week. So did it take you by surprise?
Massively, yeah. I think it's... if you try to think of a programme they should not axe, and a way of not axing it, i.e. letting Victoria Derbyshire know by reading it in The Times, rather than approaching her with a discussion about the issue first, is everything about it is monstrously stupid. And I mean, there are probably, you know, maybe Panorama's still going, isn't it, in its 30-minute form. Maybe axing that, you know, even though it's been reduced from now, would be stupid, monstrously stupid.
Well, I can think of other shows.
Yeah,
I
but
mean,
not many.
Praise,
but I mean, in terms
The Archers.
Of, you know what? Our glorious friend Richard Bacon summed it up. And he tweeted and he said, it's exactly the kind of show the BBC wants to do and should be doing, and they've decided to get rid of it.
So outline that for us, because that's about sort of underserved audiences, working class stories, giving voices to diverse talent in production. Is all that true, do you think, or is that just what actually the media Twitterati are saying?
Oh, no, I think there's definitely a case for that being true. I think that they've done some amazing campaigns, and I was bemused when I read it. I couldn't really believe it. And all I can kind of fantasize about is that some kind of Six Music type campaign is going to happen that is going to persuade them to keep it on. Maybe if Mumsnet can get really going with something, I don't know. But that, like, it should be there. I mean, what are we going to have? Just loads of homes under the hammer?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we had for the 10 years before, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think you do wonder whether, you know, have a conspiracy theory of, yeah, are they deliberately doing this because it's going to kick up a massive stink?
I did wonder that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's a storyline from W1A, but these things happen that you deliberately choose to act a very, very prestigious, award-winning, much-admired show.
And also cheap. I mean, that's the other thing.
How much can it cost?
It looks like it's filmed on a toaster.
It must be one episode of the start materials, you know.
Right.
Albeit the co-pro that is.
But it's who's paying for it, isn't it? So it's News and Current Affairs pays for it.
Yeah. So for them, it's a big budget
and
show.
They've got
but it's also shown on the News Channel, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they're filling
yeah,
airtime on two
yeah.
channels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's
and getting online material from it.
But you do wonder. So it's already kicking up a stink. You know, it alerts everyone to the fact that BBC has to cut its budget by what, 70, 80 million or something.
Yeah. £80 million over the last
mostly
4 years.
Due to the bloody pensioner scheme that they've, you know, that they got forced panned by the government. So now you've got ministers saying, oh no, they shouldn't cut this program. Well, you're the ones who are putting them in this situation. I totally get that from the BBC's point of view. But, you know, there must be some mediocre, you know, drama or whatever that, you know, that you could axe first instead of this flagship. And you know, it's a show I genuinely watch. They did one of the best discussions of Labour anti-Semitism in the build-up to the election that I've ever seen on TV. And she handles these things brilliantly. So
what is the secret sauce there? Like, what's different, you know, to the way Newsnight treats the story and the way they
treat it? A little bit what I was talking about with Charlotte Moore. I think Victoria Derbyshire she's a brilliant interviewer, and she gets to the nub of the issue very, very quickly.
She also respects people. Like, I saw one of their election debates, and she gave this kind of older gentleman in the debate like the microphone and let him, and he was absolutely brilliant. And he had the microphone, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And I thought no other program would have done that. Mm. No other program would have let him keep coming back. And she was guiding the politicians to speak directly to him. And I've never really seen that kind of just taking your time with something rather than just quick, 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 quick. It let people breathe. And I felt like she allowed voices through that you don't get, like you don't get them in question time. Because I don't think the same audience would apply to be in that audience. And I'd have absolutely no, you wouldn't get them on Channel 4 News's, you know, mini question kind of programmes either. So I think it's the only place where you hear those voices and they're given the space that they deserve.
All right, we'll be back with some more media news after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spiritland Studios are run by Spiritland Productions, providers of professional audio solutions to TV, radio and online. As well as their broadcast standard studio facilities, Spiritland Productions also has a world-class OB vehicle for audio and video projects of any scale. Whether it's podcasting, outside broadcasting or live concert recording, produce your next show with Spiritland Productions. Go to spiritlandproductions.com now. Okay, sticking with TV news now, Comcast are building what they hope is going to rival CNN as the world's best global news network. Boy, this is NBC Sky World News. Mm. That's a launch name, isn't it? That's not the name it's going to be.
It is.
What do we know?
Well, apparently they're going to... obviously now NBC Universal owns Sky, which still some people don't realize. I think a lot of people probably, if you ask a lot of people in the street, you know, who owns Sky, they'll say Rupert Murdoch, but he is gone. Mm. And it is owned by NBC Universal. So it does make sense. Sky News, I think, is one of the greatest Sky achievements is Sky News. I think it's a really, you know, respected, admired, and genuinely very good news channel. That sometimes does a better job, dare I say, than BBC's news channel of just, you know, doing that thing where you're constantly on air 24 hours a day covering not that much stuff. And then you've got CNN. And the quotes from the NBC people is we've always wanted to try and work out a way of getting out MSNBC type channel in it, which is big, huge in America, into a global audience. So they're giving it a go.
Audience.
I mean, I am slightly dubious because I feel like, do you really need, you know, another version of CNN or BBC World News or whatever? I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, you might as well go for it.
And what I thought was quite revealing about this, Deborah, reading one of the stories about how it's come to be, is the lady who's going to be launching this initiative was saying that the chap who runs Comcast came to her with the idea because he spends a lot of time in hotels. I thought, this is it. This is the chief executive coming up with a channel he wants to watch. because he spends a lot of time watching CNN when he's in Saudi Arabia. But I mean, that's not most people, is it? You do only watch it when you're in a hotel or an airport departure lounge. Who chooses international news channels, really?
It happened to me once in Berlin. I fell off something and hurt my knee, and I was trapped in bed just watching hard news on repeat on the BBC. I read about it, and I didn't have a second thought about it. I really did not care. I would imagine a lot of people feel that way.
Do you think the brands align, though, even on that basis? I mean, to me, it feels a bit like when Kraft bought Cadbury and suddenly you could get Oreos and Dairy Milk. Do you know what I mean? Like NBC, Sky News, they're not even the same thing in my mind.
No, it is slightly weird. And also, you think, because CNN does feel like a liberal alternative to, obviously, you know, Fox News came later, but, you know, in the current situation of news channels in your hotel room that you look at in your hotel room, if you're lucky enough to stay in a hotel, you're like, well, I'm not going to watch Fox News because it's run by a lunatic right-winger, so I might as well watch CNN and it's fine. It's kind of liberal, it is. And so maybe, you know, but Sky News can't really get involved in that thing because it still has to be, you know, if it's showing in this country, it has to be completely
genuinely fair and balanced.
Yeah, fair and balanced. So I don't quite get why they feel that they need the Sky News element of it. Just, you know, who knows? I don't get why they feel it's such an opportunity, no.
I suppose it is good news for Britain, though, isn't it? They're going to be basing an international news channel here, more journalists.
Good news for journalists,
yeah. Because all those international channels are based.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Al Jazeera has a bureau here, don't they? But they're basically based in America.
Yeah, and CNN has a office here, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you're sort of watching, is it Atlanta where they're based? You're basically watching Atlanta.
I mean, they've got offices, mainly in Atlanta, but in New York as well. Yeah.
And then a TV app that has had a lot of traction, I imagine you are aware of, Deborah, is Disney Plus.
Yes.
It's been brought back a week. It's going to be launched a week earlier than planned, March the 24th in the UK. Why so hasty?
If I was a subscription channel, I'd be going quickly because I think that subscription is possibly coming to an end as the way to do channels. So I was just saying to Boy before we started that there's quite a few reports, and one by Deloitte recently, which talk about subscription fatigue setting in. And I certainly have subscription fatigue. I have stuff going out of my account and I look at my bill and I'm like, when did I sign up for that? Oh yeah, I wanted to watch that. I've got, in my household, I think we have two Now TV accounts. We have like two Amazon Prime accounts. We have two Netflixes. Both our sets of parents use our Netflixes. You know, it's getting very complicated to watch the telly you want to see. And, you know, especially with Netflix getting a little bit poorer in quality in terms of what I want to see, like, are we going to hold on to these subscriptions? No, somebody's got to bring all this together. And so, yeah, they should go quickly because I think like Quibi's coming, that's going to cost people money. There's loads of different things coming that are going to cost people money.
Do you think Quibi has a chance, Boyd, in this marketplace? This is the app that's going to let you watch videos vertically as well as horizontally.
I don't get... Well, and also only watch it on your phone, your smartphone. Yeah. I am bewildered by Quibi, I have to say, as a concept. But I have got Steven Spielberg providing content for it, so that will...
There's a lot of data going that way. So if people aren't watching TV on their telly, they're most likely to be watching it on their phones.
Sure, yeah.
But I think going more that way with younger people.
Yeah, it is. I always slightly counter this idea. I mean, there is a general feeling among, I think, TV executives, you know, that young people don't watch TV anymore and they're all watching YouTube. And, you know, and there are some statistics, to be fair, that agrees with that. But my question is, when you reach 30, then you're not going to carry on watching these differences on YouTube, you know. And I think most people do, you know, gravitate to their TV sets and watch quite a lot of linear TV. Mm. As for Disney Plus launching a week earlier, I mean, they'd had to launch as soon as possible, just purely because their biggest hit, The Mandalorian, which is this Star Wars spin-off with Baby Yoda, who's become a phenomenon, they need to get that out there globally, because it's not just UK where they're launching, they need to launch in half of Europe as well, because it's being pirated, because, you know, fans of that show's already finished in the States, The Mandalorian, which is its big draw, and Baby Yoda's become a huge thing, and you can't yet get the toys. They want to bring the toys out and the merchandise as soon as possible, because people are pirating it and people are watching it illegally, you know, downloading it, so they have to get it out there as quickly as possible.
Have you given any thought, Deborah, into landscape versus portrait for Wakey?
We're vertical.
So you're wholly vertical?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if I turn it landscape, I can't watch it. I'm watching it sideways.
And you know what? It's actually really hard to do a vertical video app. So after HQ Trivia, we were like, this must have been solved by somebody. This must be like white labeled and it's really easy. But no, Vimeo's not set up for it. YouTube's not set up for it under certain circumstances. Cameras are not set up for it. So we have to literally turn our camera on side. and do lots of clever coding stuff on Vimeo in order to get it round that way. But I think it works really well. I think it's quite exciting.
Is that just because it feels a bit more like you're filming it? Like if you hold the camera, if you hold the phone that way, it's more natural in your hands, it feels more intimate?
Well, I think you can have commenting under it, and I think that's quite an important part of watching shows now. So like when I watch Love Island or Bake Off, I have, you know, pretty busy WhatsApp groups that I get involved in at the same time as watching it. So I think that commenting may be something that becomes a thing, and that's only really possible if you're watching it vertical, because you cannot fit comment in easily landscape on a phone.
Here's a question I've never asked of our guest before. How's your shorthand, Deborah?
Appalling, but my mum's is amazing.
Right.
She went to secretary college in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah, my grandma went.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
And she still, whenever she does it, it's like a magical secret pixie language that I'm really, well, I've done some writing and some journalism, and I definitely think that it would have been a lot easier for me if I had had the skill of shorthand.
But wait, what do you think? Are you a shorthander?
No.
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 So you go to not. Press junket after press junket.
Yeah, I record it on my phone.
So if it was useful for anyone, you'd think Boyd Hilton would be using it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely not, no. I mean, no, you don't need it. No one needs it. It's ridiculous.
I ask because the editor-in-chief of the UK's biggest news agency has said job applications he receives without shorthand go straight in the bin.
Yeah.
This is
he by any chance an old white guy?
You can look him up on LinkedIn. It is PA Media's Pete Clifton. Mm. Is he wrong then to say new recruits should have it?
Yes.
But there's two dimensions to this, isn't there? There's whether or not it's useful, and there's whether or not it's indicative of someone who's really put in the effort to try and become a journalist. They've gone and got some training, so that means they really want this.
One of the best, most committed journalists I know, Sarah Graham, and she does a blog called Hysterical Women. She knows shorthand, and I just think that, like, she went and she did a proper journalism course, she did a proper journalism degree, like, she took that route. I ended up writing almost completely by accident. I went and did an arts degree where, like, we were throwing paint at each other for 3 years, basically. And I just think, yes, she treated it as a craft. You know, she understands it historically, and I really admire that, and I've always admired her for that. But I think there's different types of journalists,
yeah,
different types of writers, and I would definitely love someone on my team who could do shorthand in almost any business, actually.
So Pete, this guy that you said is wrong,
yeah,
when he's recruiting people to be a court reporter,
okay, all right,
that is a specific thing, no?
All right, court reporters, fine. I can see that. I can see court reporting. You need to get, you know, transcript, or what, you know, you need to quote what's happening, the proceedings, very accurately, as quickly as possible. I can see there why shorthand. But in almost every other regard, people record on their phones. Everyone's got, you know, a way of recording something, an electronic record of some kind. And it's also more accurate. When I first found out that some people do interviews, conduct interviews, big name writers, you know, conduct interviews for newspapers, just writing notes, writing shorthand notes. They don't record it. I always found that extraordinary. Mm. For me, it's like the absolute word for word what someone says, verbatim, which in most of the interviews that I do for Heat and Pilot TV, the magazines I work for, are in Q&A form. And if I'm not quoting every single word they say accurately, I feel like it's wrong. Whereas you can't get that accuracy from just writing notes on it or writing down what they say in shorthand.
But there is the transcription. Sorry.
No.
There is the transcription. Like, there isn't is there a really easy transcription app?
Yeah, I mean, there are transcription apps. I don't feel any of them are easy. I don't trust any of them.
Yeah, no,
so I do
me
myself.
Neither.
It's painful. Transcribing interviews is the worst thing in the world for a
child. It is torture.
Yeah. But I'd rather do it from recording than from shorthand notes.
But in a weird way, you're sort of protecting yourself if you know that the person you've interviewed also is not keeping a recording. Then actually, you are reliant on your shorthand notes. I mean, that could actually be quite a good defence, couldn't it? No one can prove otherwise that the thing wasn't said.
I guess so, but I think in this day and age, I think it'd be suspicious when, oh no, I've only got my shorthand notes that no one else can read. Yeah.
Well, okay. Another circumstance some journalists say it's useful is when they're basically gossiping to someone, or they're having a kind of intimate but not obviously professional encounter with them to try and get some information.
Okay.
Or a sensitive thing, you know, someone's just lost their child and they've gone up and approached them somewhere. As soon as you say, "Do you mind if I record this?" which is what you legally have to if you're going to use that, they will clam up and not talk to you, but they won't notice necessarily or feel it's an intrusive thing for you to be writing notes down.
Yeah, to be honest, I've never been a news reporter in my life, and I find the whole idea of it completely bewildering. So I, you know, I have to be upfront and say, you know, as a TV and film critic, which is basically what I am, or an interviewer of celebrities and actors, it's not needed at all. But that example does strike me as being different. Yeah, and of course, when I do get my recorder out and record something, even with the famous, they immediately kind of behave differently. It's quite that is quite interesting. Yeah, they do.
But then I suppose, you know, you were mentioning earlier, Deborah, about kind of widening the pool of talent that goes to work for some of, you know, our media organisations. I saw a tweet that Steph McGovern put out this week. I don't know if you saw that. She's recruiting, well, she's not, but the production company she's working with is recruiting for a daytime show she's making for Channel 4. And she made a point when she tweeted it of saying, you know, this is in Leeds. I'd love to have people working on the show who haven't worked in telly before. And I suppose something like shorthand does kind of mean, I mean, okay, you may have worked really hard to pay yourself through university, you don't have to be privileged, but it does kind of mean you've had to spend money, you've had to go through a traditional route. Maybe it's alienating for some people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, 100%. I think that it would be really difficult to get an incredibly diverse group of people in your organisation if you were stipulating that everybody had to know shorthand before they got there. But in fact, it's obviously ridiculous. But I think the idea that it's a bad thing to have is definitely not the case. I just think this guy is, I mean, he's trapped somewhere.
He's trapped in the court reporting
world. Trapped in a little room.
Which is the only place where it's needed.
All right, well, let's move on to an area of your expertise, boy.
Ooh.
Which is the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, yeah, okay,
fair. Sandy Toksvig's leaving.
Yeah.
Will you miss her? Why is she going? Who's going to replace her?
I won't miss her, to be honest. I've never got on with the Toksvig, the current duo.
The whole era.
The whole era, okay. Yeah. I'm very much of the old school. It was at its peak in the BBC days with Mel and Sue. And I think I felt right from the start that the Channel 4 presenting duo, I've forgotten his name, sorry.
Noel Fielding.
Thank you, I'll do that again. Yeah. I've always thought that the duo of Noel Fielding and Sandy Toksvig felt contrived. Mm. In comparison, and I think a lot of their jokes are, you can see coming a mile off and are a bit like try hard. And I think the show is still, I love the show still, although a lot of people felt the last series was also a bit try hard in terms of, you know, being slightly harsh to the contestants. I think she's great on QI. I think she's great generally. I really like her as a presenter. I think she's fantastic. I think she's funny and witty and all of that. But I did not get on with that duo as a prospect for Bake Off. I think Channel 4 needs to be really careful and get someone who is genuinely has a kind of real affection for the show. I didn't ever sense that she had a particular, you know, love of the show or of baking or of, you know, the whole thing. And that may sound unfair. I mean, she famously made a joke about it years ago before she was presenter of the show, saying it's just people, you know, making fun of the whole thing. Mm. So, yeah, in short, get someone really good who will work better.
There you are. Who needs Dominic Cummings' job advert? Who would you put in the role? Would you try and win back Mel and Sue? Would you get Joe Brand in?
Okay, so Nicola Coughlan from Derry Girls was obviously somewhere with... who's the guy with long hair from Queer Eye? Who does the hair?
Yeah, know the guy you mean.
Oh, come
on. The Northern bloke. Van Ness.
Yeah.
Jonathan Van Ness.
Yeah. And they were together and she announced that he wanted to be the new replacement presenter for Bake Off. And then he has continued that on his own Twitter and Instagram. And I think that would be an awesome call. I would fully endorse that.
It would be a bit doody though, wouldn't it, if he had two dudes hosting it?
I don't know if it would be doody.
Well, because you've got Paul Holland.
Not doody dudes.
And, well,
it's not going to be laddie, is it?
All right, not laddie, but I still think, I don't know. I feel like you've got to have a Lisa Tarbuck.
Oh, does God, it need, I love yeah. Lisa Tarbuck.
Does it need two presenters at all? I mean, the children's one, which is the only one I watch because my four-year-old is interested in that and it's more bearable than most things on CBeebies, is presented by Harry Hill.
And now he does a brilliant job.
It works really well. Yeah, I mean, I'd happily watch Harry Hill presenting the grown-up one. And if that was a bit of a strong flavour for people, I still think it proves that one person can present the show.
I don't think that one person is necessarily the person that's left. I think Lisa Tarbuck is the best call I've heard so far.
Yeah, I think she'd be great. I do love Harry Hill, though. You're right. Harry Hill's a good call, but I think he'd be better on his own than shoved with someone else. Yeah, although, you know, I'm sure Noel Fielding doesn't want to be let go just because Sandy Toksvig's going. But
he is good. I
love
it.
No, I love them both separately as talents, but I've never felt as a duo for this show.
So weird.
It's a weird combo.
You forget how rogue it was to get Noel Fielding in the first place.
It was rogue. It was completely rogue.
You can understand that Sandy Toksvig was like the home county's anchor to him.
Let's not forget, when it was getting 13 million viewers on BBC One, Mel and Sue, those judges, you know, in the Mary Berry days, it was a perfect combination. The whole thing was a perfect TV show. And I feel like since then, it's not as perfect.
What, you want more VTs about Vienna Cakes?
I want more VTs about
Actually,
Vienna Cakes.
I miss them.
Do you?
I miss the history bit. I really do. I'm like, but tell me the history of this type of pastry. I'm going to have to Google. Well, annoying.
You can contribute this in the license fee renewal conversation. Let's turn our attention to The Simpsons briefly. Do you know what the news is here? You're looking at me skeptically.
Yes. Yeah, I've remembered.
Go on.
It's the character of Apu.
Apu, yes.
Is going to be voiced by somebody different.
Or not at all. So yeah, Hank Azaria has said that collaboratively, he and the Simpsons team have decided that he will no longer be voicing Apu some years after that documentary questioning the whole thing anyway is a bit racist.
Yeah.
But they've come to the decision. Boy, it was sort of inevitable,
wasn't
it?
It was totally inevitable, yeah. I mean, you just can't, in this day and age,
yeah,
you cannot have, you know, it's the equivalent of blackface, isn't it, really? It's not far away from that. So I think, you know, it was inevitable, yeah. It just took rather a long while to do it. And I think someone else could voice the character. They don't have to get rid of the character.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's where it's interesting, isn't it? So, yes, it's a stereotype in that he had an arranged marriage and he's got seven kids and he runs a corner shop. But that's not the objection primarily. The objection is it's a white man voicing him.
Yeah, I think so, because there's loads of types in, you know, in this kind of show. The Simpsons is a sitcom, effectively, and sitcoms are all about types and stereotypes and all of that. And I don't think the character itself would, old white guy saying this, but I didn't get the sense that there was a general offence taken at the character by many people, but there was at the fact that Hank Azaria was playing that character.
Well, it puts him in a really difficult position because, you know, if you get rid of the character, you're getting rid of the only South Asian representation in The Simpsons.
Well, is The Simpsons good anymore?
Oh, I mean, I don't watch it anymore.
No, yeah, well, so. Here we go. I think that's the more fundamental question. It's kind of like, Simpsons used to be one of my go-tos, like the kind of thing I'd watch on repeat again and again and again. And I don't think I've watched a new Simpsons for years.
No, but it still does a job. I mean, it still gets pretty good ratings.
I mean, I still watch The Simpsons.
Oh, there you go.
Do you?
I mean, it's to answer your question, it's 4 stars now.
Okay.
And it used to be
good.
5.
That's pretty good.
But it's never less than 3.
No.
It's a never less than 3-star show.
That is impressive.
Still.
Yeah.
Like this. Okay. There is just time to squeeze in our legendary media quiz. You excited, Deborah?
I'm scared.
Your first time.
Yeah.
You already know about influencers, but get ready to meet the virtual influencers, social media personalities whose images and sometimes words are computer generated. Tech marketing magazine The Drum has created a virtual influencer to be their February cover star. All our guests need to do is answer 3 easy questions about her. You buzz in with your name when you know the answer. So, Boyd, you will say...
Boyd.
And Deborah, you will say...
Boyd.
Let's go. Here's question number 1. The Drum's virtual influencer is a 25-year-old called Floresta, but what does her name mean in Portuguese?
Boyd. Forest.
Correct. Flo, as she's otherwise known, is a Brazilian Portuguese woman based in the UK who wants to raise awareness of environmental issues through Instagram posts. Is it ridiculous to think that avatars like Flo can influence anyone, really?
That's not ridiculous at all. In fact, I welcome it.
Really?
Why?
Well, I think it might be psychologically healthier for an influencer to be a made-up character than an actual person.
Yes.
So that's one thing. I just think it's plausible, and I think it's going to happen, and it's kind of inevitable.
Question number 2. Can you name one of the 2 agencies who helped research and program Floresta's profile and personality? Buzz in with your name when you know one of the 2 answers. I'll give you a clue. One of the agencies is called The Virtual Ear. I mean, their name does what it says on the tin. The Virtual
Influence.
Yeah,
Boyd. Influence, oh. Sorry. Yeah, that was a shame.
It was the Virtual Influencer Agency.
Oh, God.
The other agency is called Live and...
Influence, Boyd.
I was hoping one of you would say die.
Oh, I was kidding.
It's not die.
Oh, okay.
I was just hoping one of you would say that.
She's throwing the word influence into anything.
It's Live and Breathe the other agency. Floresta posts images rendered by VIA's design team, shares poetry penned by a neural network that can produce original verse, and holds conversations with followers produced using natural language processing software that can effectively mimic tone.
This is the end of civilization.
It's coming.
Oh, God.
It is coming.
So, I've lost track now. Boyd got the first one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Boyd's definitely winning.
Well, no, but this is your chance.
I don't know if any of us are winning.
To equalise. The last question is a missing words challenge, so it's all to play for. I'm going to read you a line of poetry posted by Flo and created by Algorithm. All you have to do is guess the missing word. Unload her weeds, forest tongue and lily, in the mire and throes of tolerable what?
Boyd.
Yes, Deborah. Oh, you're so close.
Boyd.
Did you know that?
No.
You just guessed that?
Yeah.
Phonetically, very close. Boyd.
Oh, phonetically, very close. I was going to say river. I don't know.
Oh, Boyd.
Yes. Paul. Oh, you're so close.
Oh, no.
It's a four-letter word that begins P-O.
It begins with P-O,
yeah.
Port.
Pose.
It's pomp.
Pomp.
Yes.
Pomp.
Oh. In the mire and throes of tolerable pomp. Well, poetry doesn't need to make sense, does it?
Especially when it's not written by someone virtual. Yeah.
Well, it was generated by inputting the work of William Wordsworth into the AI machine. Other lines include, "Pearl the oak tree with jasmine clock colours. We're only here to mimic the happy sky."
If the BBC gets involved in this and still cuts the Victoria Derby, I'm furious. I'm just saying that now. And I bet they will. I bet for someone in the BBC is going, we need to get involved in this virtual influencer thing. No, well, you don't.
You have won the quiz,
thanks.
Boyd. Congratulations. Off you go to follow floresta.nas on Instagram to read more. That's it for today. My thanks to Deborah Coughlin and to Boyd Hilton. If you like what we're up to here on the Media Podcast and you want to help us keep doing it, then do consider taking out a voluntary subscription. Head to themediapodcast.com/donate and choose an amount to keep us going all year round. You can catch up with our previous episodes and get new ones as soon as they're released by subscribing for free on our website, themediapodcast.com. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer Rebecca Grisdale Sherry. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. Until next time, bye bye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.